Hello and good morning, and welcome to Studies Through the Bible with Pastor Zach Ebarb. I am Pastor Zach, and today we are getting into Genesis chapter 40. Now, I know we've kind of been in and out for a while. We've had some church things that have come up, and we've had some other issues technologically speaking. And during the time that we have not been able to post or put anything out, that I have been just tied up six ways to Sunday, I have kind of revisited some of the style that we're going to have as we're going through our study. I've kind of gone back and forth, and I've listened over some of the old ones. And while we're studying and we're getting to the application of all of these chapters, I feel like I'm not quite giving you guys all of the tools in the tool shed, for lack of a better way of putting it. We haven't really gotten into some serious, deep conversations in a while. And so we're going to kind of try to bring this around more to where you're still going to get some application of these passages and how they apply to your life, because I want you to walk away with something if you're not getting the rest of it. But I want you to learn how to think about these passages, how to break them down, the questions to ask, the ways to approach them when you're studying. So as we're getting into chapter 40, we're going to have a bit of a different style, okay? So getting into chapter 40, we are again looking at the life of Joseph. And Joseph's life has been quite tumultuous up to this point, to kind of give you a revamp. He's been sold into slavery. He's gone into Potiphar's home. Potiphar's wife's tried to have an affair with him. He's fled from that, and now he's been cast into prison. And in his time in prison, we are at a point where we learn about a particular instance regarding a butler and a baker in the house of Pharaoh. And both of these men have been thrown into prison. Now, this is a very, I would say, very famous story from the life of Joseph. It's definitely one that I can recall as a young boy in Sunday school. That I have definitely preached out of occasionally and talked to other people about. And it's a passage that I think sometimes we kind of lose the meaning in it. And so today we're going to look at what is the point of chapter 40. Now, I know what you're probably thinking at this point. You're like, oh, well, it proves the relationship between God and Joseph. It kind of helps to pivot Joseph towards where he's eventually going to be as the right-hand man of Pharaoh. There's a lot of what I would call classical approaches to this chapter, ways that pastors would address it and look at it. But we kind of want to dig a little bit beyond that, because there's a lot of times that, truthfully, pastors go very deep in our study time, but we don't always get to present that to our audiences. That's not because we think that you're not worthy of it. That's not because we don't think you'd understand it or grasp it. But sadly, that's kind of where our culture is. Even for me personally, as I'm preaching, I can tell when I'm beginning to lose my audience. And usually it's around about a 30-minute mark, and you can't have a long drawn out in-depth look at these chapters of the Bible when you're dealing with a culture that's programmed into 30-minute sound bites. So, what's the point of chapter 40? Before we ever even read it, you know the story. The butler, the baker in jail, both have a dream. Joseph interprets the dream of the butler and says, hey, that's actually a sign that within 3 days you're going to be released and restored to your position. And then the baker says, well, hang on, dude. Tell me what my dream means. And Joseph's a little hesitant to interpret the dream of this man, but then informs him that within 3 days he would be executed. And basically, everything that he says is exactly what happens. And so we have to ask ourselves, what is the point? What are we supposed to learn from this chapter for our own lives? Because yes, it proves David, or excuse me, David, goodness, we're in Second Chronicles on Sunday, so David's on my mind. Anyway, And not David, but Joseph, of course, yes, it proves Joseph's relationship with God, but there's been a lot of things up to this point, including the fact that he's even in jail and not been executed for this supposed affair, that proves that Joseph and God's relationship is strong. This doesn't necessarily really pinion Joseph back into the place of Pharaoh, because we know that the butler, as soon as he gets into this new position, he all but forgets about Joseph until there comes a time that Pharaoh has a dream and he goes, "Oh, what's that? That's that. There's a guy. I was in jail with him for 3 days, man. Give me a minute. Yeah, Joseph. You know, he actually told us what our dreams meant. Maybe give him a try." So there's things like that that are definitely there, but I think this chapter teaches us a much more simple lesson. And a lesson that I would argue that even though it's probably going to sound extraordinarily simple, it's one that I see God's own people fail to do on a regular basis. It's one that even sometimes, I would even argue maybe most of the time, some pastors fail to do as well in their daily walk with God. And we do this, I'll tell you right now, as a quote unquote excuse to show the love of God. And what this lesson is that we are to be honest, regardless of what it is that we have to say. One of the biggest things that God's people face in this day and time is we kind of have this movement amongst ourselves that we don't tell the truth if we hurt somebody's feelings, or we try to spin the truth so that we still say it, but we don't say it with its fullness, and all of this is in the name of, well, we don't want to be mean. Well, we don't want to be judgmental. Well, we don't want to come off unloving. And friends, I'm just going to be totally blunt with you. The only time that God's people actually come off judgmental is when we are incorrect about what it is that we're saying. I'll give you a perfect example. And if you're on here and you like him, I'm sorry. I'm going to hurt your feelings. But John MacArthur the other day piped off about basically that women were useless and no for no good if they said they were Christian women, but they didn't just stay at their home and play housewife all day, and they were out working outside of their home. That's not direct quotations, but it's the basic gist of what was said. I guess I could go read the actual paragraph from the article again if I had to. And what made that post judgmental was not that what he said about the women. If it was true that the word of God says a woman ought not to work outside of the house, and that was a biblical restraint, and these women were choosing to do so anyway for pride or ego, the way he was addressing in the article, then I wouldn't find it to be judgmental. Fact is fact. But what made it judgmental was this: not true. There's nowhere in the Bible that that is dictated. And you can pull up the proverb woman, you could pull up Titus chapter 2, and all of those things have nothing to do with, their job is to just stay within the home. If a woman can manage her household and work a job, more power to her. As long as she is maintaining her duties of making sure that the house is managed, which is got a whole different meaning than what most people think, she's not fulfilling her scriptural duties. And that also doesn't mean that men get to neglect their duties at home either, because that's supposedly their wife's job. But that's a sermon for another time. So when we're talking about honesty, we have to get that out of the way first. We have to get it out of your mind that for you to tell the truth makes you judgmental, makes you mean, makes you hurtful, makes you violent, depending on who it is that we're talking to. Friend, you as a child of God, if what you say is what God says, it's not your words, it's God's. Now, if they want to say, I'll be honest with you, you're going to hear that you're judgmental. You may even hear that you're mean. But, friend, at the end of the day, it's not your idea, and it's not your truth, and it's not your law. It's God's. Therefore, it's not up for debate whether you agree with it, don't agree with it, or the person that you're talking to agrees with it or doesn't agree with it. And I think that that's the lesson that is very heavily presented here. Because we have Joseph, who is presented with these two men. One of them, it's very easy to tell him the truth. The other man, I'm sure Joseph would have rather just pretended he didn't know what that dream was and go on about his day. But here we see that despite the difference of news, Joseph was still honest in what he said. So let's look at the problem, and let's kind of break this down. Let's try to have some deeper discussions about what's going on here. And so it says in verse 1, "And it came to pass after these things that the butler of the king of Egypt and his baker had offended their lord the king of Egypt." So right off the bat, this is, I've heard some people say that, you know, that they hurt Pharaoh's feelings about this. Now I want you to understand that this is not some situation where Pharaoh is being whiny. This is the idea that there was more likely an attempt on Pharaoh's life. It has the nature that it was a heavy crime, and it was between one of these two men that helped perpetuate this crime. I think I used that word correctly. I had a small moment where my brain just shut off. And so what we have here are two men who are essentially on death row, as it is. There's been a very, very high crime that's been committed. This isn't just Pharaoh being upset. There's something bad that has occurred. It says, "And Pharaoh was wroth against two of his officers, against the chief of the butlers and against the chief of the bakers. And he put them in ward in the house of the captain of the guard into the prison, the place where Joseph was bound." So both of these men go to the same essentially royal prison, federal prison, that Joseph is being kept in because their crimes are against Pharaoh. So they're really, really up there in the system of being in trouble. And the reason that he's angry against these two men is we're never specifically told if these two men were directly involved in whatever happened. We're never even told, as a matter of fact, that the baker himself was involved in what happened. More than likely, it comes off that these two had a responsibility to make sure that something like that wouldn't have happened, and one of them, who we obviously know is the baker because you've heard the story, was negligent in making sure that this happenstance did not occur. It says, "And the captain of the guard charged Joseph with them, and he served them, and they continued a season in ward." So, they come into prison, and they are immediately placed in the care of Joseph. What's really awesome about this is a lot of people go, "Oh, I mean, poor Joseph, you know, he was Potiphar's house, then he's thrown in prison." Guys, I'm going to tell you something right now. Joseph was always blessed by God, no matter what situation he was in. Even here, the guard puts Joseph in charge of these prisoners, meaning that Joseph's a prisoner, but Joseph's not really a prisoner in the eyes of many of these people. He's trustworthy, he's making things more efficient, making things run smoothly, they trust him completely. He is essentially in prison at this point because Potiphar is trying to maintain the honor of an inhonorable woman. And so Joseph is immediately placed in charge of these guys. And it says, "And they continued a season in ward." A lot of people argue about what exactly this means. I've heard many, many different debates as to how long it is. Some say, you know, it means a day, some a year, some, you know, literally a season. The idea, more than likely, that's being presented here is probably more towards the idea that they were there for a day or there for a literal season, you know, about 2 or 3 months. I would find it very hard to believe that Pharaoh would wait up to a year to deal with a matter that was so bad he threw two men in federal prison. It seems to me that that would be something that he would address rather quickly and swiftly. And while they were in prison, it says they dreamed a dream, both of them. Each man his dream in one night, each man according to the interpretation of his dream, the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt, which were bound in the prison. And Joseph came in unto them in the morning and looked upon them, and behold, they were sad. There's one rule that we must address here at the beginning, something that's very interesting. I think a lot of people tend to mull over, and that is this: says Joseph comes in the morning after these men have a dream, and he could tell that they were what? They were sad. Behold, they were sad. Meaning that these men had had quite the terrible night after their dreams. They were very uneasy, very concerned about what it was that they saw. And I think that what I mean when I say that this is the first rule that we are presented with here is that we as God's people, if we're going to be honest, we have to have a very specific characteristic about ourselves that Joseph shows here. And that is that it says he knew they were sad. He knew that they were sad. Now you may be on here going, okay, Brother Zach, I, whatever, okay, so they were sad. What has that got to do with it? Well, it's not so much that they are sad that is very fascinating. That's, in my opinion, extremely important to what we're seeing here. It's the fact that Joseph knew they were sad. Now, obviously, I know there are people who are very emotional, who are very open about their emotions. I don't say very emotional negatively either, in case you get upset on here. You know, there's people that you don't have to really pay attention to know how they feel. My mother would call it, they don't have a poker face, okay? However, most people, especially men, now that's really where this comes into play, do not display their emotions. Not obviously. Sometimes you have to kind of look for them. And so, what makes this amazing is that here is Joseph. He's basically been placed in charge of making sure that these two prisoners, who are in prison legitimately, you know, I know one of them is innocent, but for the most part, they are in jail for a legitimate reason, whereas Joseph is not at all, have been placed under Joseph, and Joseph took the time to learn about these two men, enough so that he knows that they are sad. This is where a lot of Christians tend to get things wrong. Okay? This is where your issue is, where you're like, no, I don't want to be honest because I don't want to be judgmental. The reason that we, quote unquote, don't want to be honest because we'll be judgmental is because we do not follow the what I would call the program for Christian honesty. And the first part of that is that we take the time to learn about people. It's amazing to me in this day and time how unobservant all of humanity, but even more so God's people, are about other individuals. We don't take the time to study human behavior. We don't take the time to pay attention to what people say or what they do or how they interact. We don't take the time at all to try to know anything about people beyond whatever our cultural assumption is about an individual. And I'm not telling you that you need to care about everybody's feelings or something of that nature. It's not what I mean. What I mean is that we as God's children are supposed to be able to read and understand people. You're like, well, why? What's your basis for that? My basis for that is because every prophet, every missionary, every pastor, every apostle, every disciple, Jesus Christ himself, who walked this earth, that's in your Bible, had to know and understand people. And not only had to know it, but cared enough to know it. You may sit there and be going, well, that's an unreasonable expectation. No, it's not. There's actually a lot you can discern about a human being without them ever opening their mouth, if you're paying attention to what they're doing. God's people should be students of the Bible and students of men. I mean, we 100% should be. We should understand who it is we're talking to and dealing with. We should be able to reach some basic conclusions before we ever even get into the middle of a conversation about the kind of person that we're dealing with, but we don't want to pay attention to that. God's people should be people that are actively seeking to better their knowledge, not only about the Word of God, but about humanity and the way they think and the way they do. We should be people that can understand humans better than anyone else. Because not only do we know what it's like to be a lost sinner, but we also know what's going on in their mind when they do what they do. My wife will laugh at me because there's sometimes on Sundays that I can know. Not saying that I have the gift of foreknowledge or whatever, it's just basic human calculations. I can know who will not be at church and who may be at church based off of what's happened during that week. And now that may sound funny to you, but I guarantee you that if you talk to your own pastor for a little bit, he'll tell you the same thing. You say, well, what do you mean by that? Well, I mean, there's legitimate times people are not going to be at church, and then there are times that are not even remotely legitimate, but you already know because of their behavior whether or not they'll be there. And I'm sure many other people don't pay attention to that, but it's extraordinarily important that we learn about people because you can't be honest in love, you can't be honest effectively, and you can't share the right truths with somebody. And in the right way, if you don't know who it is you're dealing with. So Joseph comes in. He's got no reason to care about these two men, but he cares about them enough that he is literally discerning how they are feeling on an everyday basis the moment he sees them the first time. And he realizes that they are sad. So he knows that something has happened that's not good. It says, and he asked Pharaoh's officers that were with him in the ward of his lord's house, saying, wherefore look ye so sadly today? It's a very, very easy question. He comes in, good morning. He assesses the situation, then he says, what's the problem? And they said unto him, we have dreamed a dream, and there is no interpreter of it. And Joseph said unto them, do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me them, I pray you. So Joseph says, what's the problem? What's the issue? Joseph has taken the time to know these men, and not just know these men, but care about these men, despite the fact that he's got no reason whatsoever to be invested in these two individuals, not from a fleshly perspective. But he comes in and he sees the situation and he says, what's wrong? What's the issue? Why are you sad? Which is kind of a funny question if you ask me, because they're in prison. What reason do they not have to be sad on a regular basis? But clearly they were much more sad today than normal. And they both say that they've had a dream. Both of these men, same night, same circumstance, have had a dream and it has deeply disturbed them. And then they say, and there is no interpreter of it. I've seen a lot of people take this and say, oh, well, this can't be true because we know in the next chapter that Pharaoh calls in all these interpreters. Yes, these guys are not Pharaoh. You don't get to call your own personal interpreter when you're in federal prison for what your dream is. And Joseph makes a remarkable statement. Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me them, I pray you. Joseph looks at these two men and says, look, you don't need an interpreter if you know the God who is the one who interprets. Meaning that Joseph says, gentlemen, you don't need a human being to help you. What you need to do is pray and talk to God. And so he offers to these men to hear their dreams and to consult with God about what their dreams are. And so the chief butler tells his first. It says, and the chief butler told his dream to Joseph and said to him, in my dream, behold, a vine was before me, and in the vine were three branches. And it was as though it budded, and her blossoms shot forth, and the clusters thereof brought forth ripe grapes. And Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes, and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup, and I gave the cup into Pharaoh's hand. And Joseph said unto him, this is the interpretation of it. The three branches are 3 days. Yet within 3 days shall Pharaoh lift up thine head, and restore thee unto thy place, and thou shalt deliver Pharaoh's cup into his hand after the former manner when thou wast his butler. So, first dream is very simple. Now, it's a remarkable dream. If you want to, paint out the illustration, I guess I can do that with you very quickly. Because what happens is that The butler, he is out, basically, I would imagine in a vineyard is probably how this is set. He doesn't really give us a setting, but rather what happens. Then he says, "Behold, a vine was before me," meaning that he's standing there, more than likely in some form of a vineyard, and in front of him is this vine of fruit, whether it be it grape, muscadine, whatever. There is a grape vine of some particular type in front of him. And what happens is that he looks into the vine, and there are these three branches that start to come off of this one vine. If you've ever looked at a grapevine, a grape plant, there is one singular vine. It's usually very, very thick. It's like solid wood. Very, very thick vine, especially if you have an older grape. And then off of that main vine, it comes the what we would actually call these branches, okay? And they are essentially just smaller vines. And these three vines start to come off of this bigger, thicker vine to him, these three branches. And they grow out towards him. It says, "And it was as though it budded and her blossom shot forth." So the vines start to form out, the leaf sap, and then the flowers open and close and bud, and then clusters of grapes come. And all of this is happening before his eyes. These are things that would take months. You grapevine comes out, it greens up, it puts out branches, then you have flowers. Those flowers have to then be pollinated, and then they bud, and after they bud, then they release the fruit, and the fruit contains a seed, and so on and so forth is how the cycle of life goes for this plant. And so all of this cycle happens within the time span of this dream, before the butler. And he takes those grapes, and he has Pharaoh's cup in his hand, and he presses them into his cup, basically giving him grape juice, and he gives it to Pharaoh. And so all of this happens in his dream. Now, what's amazing is that it said the countenance of both of these men was what? Well, that it was sad. Now, what's fascinating to me about the fact that it says that they're both sad is that this does not come across as a dream worth being sad over, does it? I mean, this is what the butler does every day. He goes out to the vine, he gets the grapes, he makes for Pharaoh his grape juice. Apparently, I need to get one of these butlers. That'd be nice to have somebody else make my cup of coffee in the morning, okay? To go it off and get it off of the coffee tree and make it, and all that. I'm just teasing. But why is it that this man's sad? It's absolutely mind-blowing, isn't it? Because it says they were both sad. Why in the world is he sad? This does not sound at all like a bad dream. When we get to the baker's dream, oh yeah, I know why he's sad. That sounds like something straight out of a horror movie. But why is this man sad about his dream? And it's really kind of been on my mind as I was getting ready to finally get us back on track and doing this once a week and everything else again. I sat there and I just, why was he sad? This is not a bad dream. But there's only one reason that this man could be sad, and that is that he took a lot of pride in his work. This was not a man who had a guilty conscience. This was not a man who hated his work, who hated Pharaoh, or would have had a reason to commit some form of a crime against Pharaoh. And here he has this dream, and his dream is basically about missing his old job. He loved what he did. He had no malice in him whatsoever. And so for him to be sad about this dream speaks wonders about the character of this man. That there's no telling how difficult it was for him to be in this situation. And I have a very good feeling that this vision brought back for Joseph his own situation. Now, when we're dealing with being honest, we already learned the first rule. We see the first rule. That for us to be honest with another person, we have to take the time to understand who that person is. We can't just blindfold go in there and just spout whatever we want to. We have to form a relationship of some sort. at least enough to understand who it is that we're talking to and dealing with. The second lesson that we have to learn is that we have to tell the truth no matter what. So here for Joseph, he tells him what? Good news. 3 days. You're going to be restored to your position, right? And then he kind of slips in this little tidbit here. He says, but think on me when it shall be well with thee, and shew kindness, I pray thee, unto me, and make mention of me unto Pharaoh, and bring me out of this house. For indeed I was stolen away out of the land of the Hebrews, and here also have I done nothing that they should put me into the dungeon. So, the Joseph goes, look, this is really great news. And also, when you're back on your job here in 3 days, could you help a brother out and let Pharaoh know that I was sold into slavery unjustly and I've been locked into prison here unjustly? Kind of what you would expect any prisoner really to say. I've been into a prison before. And there were, excuse me. And there were all kinds of prisoners. Hey, I didn't do it. That's basically what Joseph is saying. But Joseph is about to be presented with what is the real problem. What makes this second point of we have to be honest no matter what that means. Meaning that we got to be willing to share the good news, and we also have to be willing to share the bad news. Now, I know what you're probably thinking. Well, okay, but yeah, so he's going to share bad news with this baker, right? But clearly this baker wasn't all that great of a guy, because we see here that that after Joseph says this, it says, when the chief baker saw that the interpretation was good, he said unto Joseph, meaning that he didn't want to know the answer until he thought he was going to hear what he wanted to hear. That's the kind of man this is. You see, these visions show incredibly who these people are. You have this butler who's literally dreaming about just getting to do his job again. I'm friend, I know a lot of people that would absolutely be happy-go-lucky if they never had to do their job again. And here he's just wants to be back to serving Pharaoh. He just wants to be back to doing what he was doing. There's no malice in his demeanor at all, but here we got this sneaky little baker that he, oh, okay, well, that was good news, so I guess then I'll tell Joseph what's going on and let Joseph tell me what it means, since it was all good news, right? He's not the kind of guy who's going to receive bad news well. And he's not the kind of guy who really wants bad news to be said at all. In fact, he only reason he even was going to ask Joseph was because he thought he would hear something good because of what the other man heard. And I know what you're thinking. Well, sometimes, it's better just keep your mouth shut or sugarcoat it, or no. That's not how God's people operate. The way that we are willing to share good news, we also must be willing to share bad news. We must be willing to be honest about things, even if that means somebody's going to be mad or upset. And I'm not on here telling you that that's always going to work out. I've seen lots of people get mad and upset and never want to speak to me again after hearing the truth. But friends, there's not anything that you can do about that. It's not your job to determine the reaction of the person to the truth. It's simply your job to give the truth. And so, here we are applying the second principle. It says, and he said unto Joseph, I was also was in my dream. Behold, I had three white baskets on my head, and in the uppermost basket there was all manner of baked meats for Pharaoh, and the birds did eat them out of the basket upon my head. Okay, and so we get a very short rendition again of a dream. And in the dream, the baker is what? He's doing his normal job, right? But he's carrying these baskets to Pharaoh. And in the basket that's on top of his head, so he's got three baskets stacked up on top of his head, on the very top basket, he said that there were birds that did eat them out of the basket upon my head, meaning that all of these birds surround his head and steal the food that he's made for Pharaoh out of the topmost basket. Okay? Now, for many of you, maybe this doesn't seem bad, but I can tell you right now, my wife, I think one of her most dreaded fears in life is to be surrounded by birds, especially birds that are flying at you and trying to get in your face. And this is a very common fear amongst humanity. I mean, there's even a scary movie from back in, oh good Lord, I think it's the 50s, 60s, maybe even earlier than that, in the 40s, where this happens. You know, all the birds start attacking people, freaks everybody out. And so he tells him this dream. And I'm sure that in some ways this dream was very concerning, kind of scary, because you have these birds that surround you and they're stealing this food. But we're never told that the birds physically go after the baker in the dream. So it's more like it's just a really bad day of work. You know, you've done all this work and it just all gets destroyed by these animals. Now you got to go back. You're going to get in trouble with Pharaoh. You know, it's more of a bothersome issue than anything else. And so that's why when he hears that everything was good for the butler, he's not concerned about hearing Joseph, because then it's, oh, well, you know, in 3 days you're going to be restored, but you're going to have a really bad day at work. Okay? It's kind of more than likely what his attitude was towards it. And given the personality of this man, I know that in this moment, Joseph didn't want to tell him the truth. I say, well, how do you know that? Well, I know that because any child of God who has to give bad news to somebody or tell them something they know they're not going to like doesn't really want to do it. And the reason that they don't really want to do it is because we do genuinely love people. We do genuinely want the best for people. We do genuinely want people to like us. We do genuinely want to do the right thing. There are not any of God's people who relish in the idea of being accused of anything remotely unkind or wrong. Which is very good. That's a good attitude to have. It's a good attitude to not want to do the wrong thing. That's exactly what your attitude should be as a child of God. However, you cannot let your attitude about those things trump the necessity of telling truth. And so Joseph answered and said, this is the interpretation thereof. The three baskets are again 3 days. Yet within 3 days shall Pharaoh lift up thy head from off thee, and shall hang thee on a tree. And the birds shall eat thy flesh from off thee. That's not the kind of news that you really want to get, is it? Joseph looks at him and says again, 3 days' time, instead of being restored to your job, Pharaoh's going to lift your head from off you, which means that he's going to be beheaded. His body is then going to be crucified, shall hang thee on a tree. That's a practice that started way before the Romans perfected it in the times of Christ. And the birds are going to what? Eat your flesh from off thee, which means you're not even going to be buried. Your body's going to be hung as a warning to everyone else to not commit whatever particular crime it is that this man committed. Now, I don't know of anyone who would want to share news this damning. Who would want to tell anyone that, hey, well, actually, this your life is coming to an end shortly. My mother works with doctors, and I don't think any of them have ever given me any wisdom as to what to say. Because as a pastor, I have sat with some people and heard the news that mom or dad's going to die, or you've got cancer, or you know that this is what your life's going to be, and it's going to end quickly. I've seen people slowly go downhill, knowing that any day I'm going to get a phone call that they have left this world. There's no easy way to give anyone news about death, let alone about a punishment as great as this execution is going to be. But there's a lesson here for God's people to learn. Obviously, the first principle that you need to have a relationship with people, because if you don't have a relationship with somebody and then you have to drop the hammer on them the way that Joseph does here, it's not going to be nearly as easy as if they at least know that there's no malice in your character. The second thing is that you have to be willing to be honest and tell the truth, even when you know they're not going to like it. Even when you know that they are going to have a problem, or they're going to think you're mean, or maybe that it's news that you'd best rather not share with them. You have to be true and honest, regardless of what the news is, or what it is that you have to say to these people. But the final lesson is one that a lot of God's people don't understand. One that I think is displayed very beautifully here. And that is that there are consequences for telling the truth, and there's consequences for not telling the truth. And I know what you're probably thinking is, well, that's a very weird thing to say. There's consequences for telling the truth, and there's not consequences. Well, consequences is not a negative word at all. Consequences means the result of what you've done. There can be good, positive consequences, and there can be negative ones. Okay? So when I say that there are the consequences of telling the truth and that there's the consequences of not telling the truth, here you see the consequences of telling the truth. Those are painted very clearly. It says, yet within 3 days shall, or excuse me, then it came to pass the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday. What better way to celebrate your birthday than with an execution? If you ever wanted to put together an Egyptian birthday where you played the part of royalty, that is a necessity. It says that he made a feast unto all his servants, and he lifted up the head of the chief butler and of the chief baker among his servants. And he restored the chief butler unto his butlership again, and he gave the cup into Pharaoh's hand. But he hanged the chief baker as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet did not the chief butler remember Joseph, but forgot him. So, what are the consequences of Joseph being honest? Well, what he said would happen is exactly what happened, which means that that was a testament to his character. There's a testament to his relationship with God. It was a testament to who Joseph is. See, friends, this is the sad part. But I've seen times in my own work as a pastor where I've told people, if you do what you're going to do and you don't do this, this is what's going to happen. I've had that conversation with family members. I've had that conversation with church members. And I have yet to see where I have not been accurate in many of my assessments. Maybe not to the degree, or maybe a little bit. There ended up being a little harsher than what I thought the degree would be of the consequences. But I'm here to tell you that when you're speaking the truth and you're speaking the truth according to God's word, regardless of how the person receives it, the consequence of you being honest is that it speaks to the fact that you do have a relationship with God. No, there's never a time a child of God should want to quote unquote prove that their relationship with God is strong by being right about something evil or bad happening to another individual. However, if you are correct, then that does speak to your relationship with God. And that's exactly what happened here, is that even though the butler forgets Joseph, which I'm telling you right now, people will forget what you do for them faster than if you did something wrong to them. Okay? Yet there's many, many times that you can do 100 good things for somebody, and they will always remember the one thing you did not do. Just take that to the bank. As a pastor, I am telling you that right now. That is more of a guarantee than anything else in your life. Okay? But the consequences are that for everyone who knew Joseph interpreted this, because we're not told who all was present, but I'm sure that there were other guards. I'm sure that it got around that Joseph had said these things to these men, at least around in the prison, to the prisoners and to the prison guards. It proved that even though what Joseph said was not all that friendly, it wasn't news anybody would want to tell somebody. He had the relationship with God that he claimed to have. I'm not telling you that you should be joyful. I doubt Joseph was joyful to know that they had hanged this man and put his body on a tree to be eaten by the birds. I seriously doubt Joseph wanted to share any of this information with this man and tell him anything that is as horrible as what was going to happen to him. But what I am telling you is that the third principle is that if you tell the truth and it comes into play, it comes into being, whether it be good or bad, it proves that your relationship with God is what you say that it is. It proves that you are God's person, regardless of how anybody else feels about that. Now, the negative consequences are that if Joseph had lied, told the man what he wanted to hear, and then he had been executed in 3 days, that would have told everyone around Joseph that he was not God's man, and that he was not the man that he claimed to be. So, the point of all this is that, at the point of chapter 40, is that God's people being honest is extremely important. Regardless of what anybody else thinks, regardless of how other people take the news, regardless of whether or not they think you're judgmental or not judgmental, you have to be honest. And there is a way that you can do that that will maybe alleviate some of the accusations that may come your way, because I'll be honest, in this day and time, you're going to share a lot more bad news than good news, I'm afraid. I find myself in that boat a lot more than I ever get to find myself in the boat of sharing good things with people because of the actions and decisions that our culture tells God's people that it's okay to do, and for some reason they think that that's okay to do. And the first one is that you need to know people. You need to understand who it is you're talking to, and you need to know in your heart that you care about them. That you care about them the way that God does. I don't, mean that you have to know every single little detail about them, but you do need to care about their soul. Because if you care about their soul, then you're willing to tell them the truth, whether that truth is good and easy to receive or hard and not so easy to receive. And finally, the reason that you have to be able to do that is because the consequences of you lying is that it disproves the relationship you have with God. Doesn't save somebody's feelings. Doesn't make you look good. Doesn't give you the opportunity to go, oh, well, I guess I could be wrong. I'm a sinner too. It disproves your testimony and your witness. But when you do tell the truth, and that truth becomes evident amongst other people, it proves the relationship that you say that you have. So as you're going about your week, I want you to dig into this chapter, and if there's anything that seems intriguing to you or you have questions about, put in the comments. I enjoy getting to have conversations with people. I had some of you like, when are we going to get the podcast going again? I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Church stuff does take priority over those kinds of things, and we have had quite a bit of that in the last couple of months. So it just has not been on my plate availability to get to it. But we will be putting them out once a week again, like we were, getting things back into order again. But if there's anything that you see when you reread this chapter, because you are going to reread this chapter, right? You're going to do the right thing. You're going to dig further into the Word of God. You're not just going to take my word for it. You're going to go look for yourself. I'm sure that you will. I believe that you will. Don't let me down. Don't disprove me. Don't make me a liar. Okay? When you look over, if there's anything that you see, anything you have questions about, shoot them to us and shoot them to me in the comments. I'll get back with you as soon as I can, have a discussion about it. If we have to, we can have another podcast about it. We're kind of moving through all the books of the Bible, but we're also going to take our time and make sure that we answer all the questions that we have to answer and contemplate the things that we see to contemplate. But secondly, I want you to implement this in your life this week. Be honest. Doesn't mean you have to be rude. Doesn't mean you have to be mean. Just tell the truth. And whatever people do with that is between them and God. Because, friend, the consequence of you not telling the truth is that you'll destroy your testimony before other people. And so that is it for Genesis chapter 40. I hope all of you have a really excellent week. Love all of you. Glad to get things back into the saddle. Be looking here once a week for them. We're going to try to do them on Mondays, but sometimes they may fall on Wednesdays. Just kind of depends on how things roll with church stuff. But they will be here once a week. And as always, you guys get out of here and go study.